Okay, so good afternoon. Welcome. Thank you all for joining me in this session about the new Windows Phone 8 SDK. I'm going to start by introducing myself. So my name is Nico Vermeer. I'm a .NET developer at Real Dolmen in Belgium. I'm also one of the board members of the Metro App Developer Network, a user group focused on everything that has to do with Windows 8 and Windows Phone development. On this slide you can also find my blog, my Twitter handle, my email address. Should you have any questions, feel free to contact me on any of these channels. I will respond as fast and as good as I can. I'm also a member of the Microsoft Extended Experts team, which is a group of community leaders here in Belgium. And with that, let's have a look at the agenda for today. So I'm going to talk a bit about what's new in the SDK, about installing the SDK, the system requirements, the new emulator, the Windows Phone emulator, the new templates that are installed with the SDK. We're going to take a look at the new possibilities in debugging Windows Phone applications. The new tiles. You probably know that Windows Phone introduced us to live tiles. Well, in Windows Phone 8, they've gone a bit further and have given us new templates. Also, just like in Windows 8, there are lock screen notifications. We have these now in Windows Phone 8 as well. We're going to take a look at them. As of Windows Phone 8, we also have different screen resolutions, and as a developer, we have to adjust our applications so that they take advantage of all the resolutions, that they look great on every device. There's the new wallet feature, which allows us to have memberships, deals, coupons. We're going to talk a bit about those. Then there's Lenses, which is basically some sort of a camera application. But more about that when we get there. There's a part about speech, that's going to be a very exciting demo that works about 50% of the time, so we'll have to wait and see there. And then we're going to finish off with the new location API, which allows us now to track location in the background for run tracking applications, for example. Okay, with that, let's have a look at what's new in the SDK. First, a new control in the SDK is the long list selector. People that have developed for Windows Phone 7 might know this one from the Windows Phone toolkit. It's kind of a jump list like you get in the list of installed applications. If you have installed quite a lot of applications in Windows Phone, you get these letters. And if you click them, you get this zoomed out view of all the letters. You can click one, it will jump to the application that starts with that letter. It used to be in the toolkit, now it's included in the SDK with some performance enhancements as well. So this is really a good control to use. The pivot and panorama control are removed from the SDK and are now included inside the Windows Phone system itself. A lot of people had complaints that they were slow, those controls, not very performant. Well, they have fixed that now by making it an actual part of the operating system instead of part of the development tools. The Bing Maps is no longer a separate SDK, it is now included, and the namespace have changed to Microsoft.phone.maps. And I think it's Nokia that powers them now, or will power them in the future. I'm not too sure about that. So the lock screen, as mentioned, we can place notifications on the lock screen. We have to be careful there because it's up to the user that he decides what applications are shown on the lock screen. So we can't be sure that our application is shown there. There's the wallet. We'll discuss that in a bit more detail when we get there. There's in-app purchases now. Which means if you're, for example, developing a game, you can sell in-game items for actual money. which was a long demanded feature of developers. There's a proximity API. We can determine if there are any devices near us with NFC. We can also make Bluetooth connections to other devices and even do file sharing. And there's DataSense. DataSense has to be enabled by the carrier and is a form of application that's, that knows how much data you have left on your monthly limit. And as developers, we have access to that data, and we can adjust our applications so that they don't use up a lot of data when the user is near his limit. The simulation dashboard is actually quite a good enhancement to development tools. It's an option in Visual Studio 2012 that allows you to simulate low or slow network connections, put the emulator on the lock screen, send a reminder, and stuff like that. We will take a look at the simulation dashboard in a minute. Launchers were a big part of Windows Phone 7, and in Windows Phone 8 they have added a few new. So we can now save appointments to the agenda. We can download maps for certain countries, and we also have, or we can ask for directions from one point to another. Okay, that was a short overview of what's new in the SDK. I probably missed a few things here and there, but to me these were the most important ones. So let's have a look at the system requirements now. For the SDK, you need Windows 8 64-bit. The Windows Phone 8 SDK does not work on Windows 7 or on Windows 8 32-bit. It won't install, it won't work. You need 6.5 gigabytes of free disk space, 4 gigabytes of RAM, and obviously a 64-bit CPU, but that's normal, or you wouldn't have Windows 8 64-bits. Now for the emulator, it's kind of a different story, because the emulator now runs on Hyper-V, and the system requirements for Hyper-V are pretty big. So you need Windows 8 Professional at least, and you need to have a CPU that supports second level address translation, or SLAT. On Intel CPUs it's called extended page table, on AMDs it's rapid virtualization indexing. Now how can you know that your CPU supports SLAT? There's a small tool called Core Info. It's available on the link I've put on my slide there. And it's a command line tool. So you just type in a command, coreinfo.exe-v, and it will tell you if you have Hyper-V installed and if you have the SLAT support on your CPU. So it should look a bit like this. In the screenshot here, you can see that next to a hypervisor, there's a small star, which means that I have Hyper-V installed. This is a screenshot of my machine taken a few days ago. And the one at the bottom, the third one, that is the SLAT support. Now there's a dash here because I already have Hyper-V installed, and that means he won't check any further. If you don't have Hyper-V installed, it will be a dash in the first option and hopefully a star on the last one. If you can't install the emulator, if your CPU doesn't support it, it's not really a problem if you have an actual device. You can still debug and run your applications on the device itself, and then you won't need any emulator. Now, what does this SLAT do actually? A bit of background information on that. So it is used by Hyper-V, and some VMware products use it as well. What it does is it helps translate the virtual memory addresses used by the data in the virtual machine to translate those to the actual physical addresses. Normally this is done by software, by the hypervisor, and it can get quite slow because it's still software that does this. And the newest CPUs have a hardware feature that takes care of this. So they abstract it away from the software level and they do it at a hardware level, which is a very big increase in performance, and which is something we need for the emulator. Okay, about the emulator. The last update of the Windows Phone 7 SDK gave us two emulator images. One for the 512 megabytes of RAM devices, and one for the low power devices with 265 megabytes of RAM. Now with the Windows Phone 8 SDK, we have four images. We have three for every resolution, and we have a fourth one for the 512 megabytes. So the new devices all have 1 gigabyte. Here are the options. The resolutions are WVGA, WXGA, and 720p. My demos of today are going to be run on the WVGA emulator, because that one fits nicely on the screen. 720p can get quite large. But it's a good idea to test your application on at least two, preferably all resolutions, just to make sure that it looks great on all devices. Windows Phone 7 also had just a small part of the operating system in the emulator. With the Windows Phone 8 emulator, we get the complete operating system in a virtual environment, so we can do practically everything with it. This is a screenshot of the emulator. And as mentioned, it is powered by Hyper-V. Also, for your network connection, the emulator is recognized as a separate device. It no longer takes the network connection of the host of your own computer, but it now identifies itself on the network as its own device. All right, let's have a quick look at the emulator. I'm going to switch to my desktop here. Should be coming up any minute now. There we go. This is the emulator. As you can see, there's quite a lot on the home screen. I haven't done anything here to customize it. This is the out-of-the-box experience that you get. Here's the new Kids Corner, also included in the emulator. You can configure it here if you want. We also have all three tile sizes, which is new in Windows 8. Also, the wallet feature is here. Now, all this information that you put in here, for the wallet, for example, all that information is destroyed when you shut down the emulator. You kind of start fresh when you restart it, except for the installed, no, even the installed applications are removed when you restart the emulator. So that's something to keep in mind. You won't be able to use it as an actual phone. Okay, switching back to the slides. Now, the templates. You have the normal Windows Phone app template. I'm talking about the project templates here in Visual Studio. There are the normal Windows Phone app templates that just start with a main page with a title on it, and that's about it. There's a data-bound application that has some data service hooked up with some dummy data, all lined up pretty nice in the template itself, and can give a nice starting point for a data-centric application. There's the panorama and the pivot templates, just like we had it in Windows Phone 7. And there's the XAML and Direct3D application. Now, new in Windows Phone 8 is that it supports native code, C++ code, which means that developers that have a game or any 3D application on a platform can easily port it over to Windows Phone 8. This template, the XAML and Direct3D app, is a XAML application, but instead of C Sharp or VB in the background, it's C++. And then there's also the HTML5 app, which is basically just a Windows Phone app with a web view control on it. And you can develop a JavaScript HTML5 application inside that template in the web view control. Okay. I think most people will want to start with the phone app template. In my opinion, gives the best starting point for an application. You're free to do what you want there. Okay, debugging some cool new features in Windows Phone 8. We can debug either managed or native codes. We can switch. Some applications have both, have managed and native code, and we can select what part of the application that we want to debug. We can now debug when we launch the application from a tile or a notification, which is new as well. In Windows Phone 7, in the emulator, when you use the back button to go out of the application, your debugger would detach. Now it stays attached. If you click a secondary tile or you click a notification to launch the app again, your debugger is still active. Let's have a look at that. So I'm inside an application here. I haven't really added anything. If I double click here on properties, here is where I can choose between managed code or native code for debugging, either for the UI task or for a background agent. And if I now run this application in my emulator, I hit the breakpoint. So there's nothing here to see. Press the back button. The application is closed now. If I take a look here, it's gone. If I now restart it from the menu here, it hits the breakpoint again. So my debugger hasn't detached, even though the application was actually closed. Which is a cool feature. Okay, that's the wrong PowerPoint. I need to run here. So, with that, we've come to the part about about tiles. Sorry. In Windows Phone 7, we could show notifications on our tiles. They were live tiles. Either the tile flipped around and showed a message or a picture, or we could have this small counter on it, which showed a number, any number that we wanted, up to 99. But people are kind of jealous of how nice the Windows Phone mail tiles looked. The mail and the messaging and the conversation tiles, they had this big number next to a beautiful icon, and developers wanted that, so they started hacking around a bit. Some came pretty close, but now it's included. So we have three template types in Windows Phone 8. We have the flip tile, which is like we know it in Windows Phone 7. The iconic tile is the one that we have on the mail applications and the message applications and other places in the US. And there's a cycle template. The cycle templates can take 9 images and will flip through them, kind of like the photo hub does on the Windows Phone. All of these three templates or these three tiles come in three sizes. the small, medium, and wide. These are the sizes, more or less. The medium and the white are known from Windows Phone 7. That's exactly the same. The small one is new in Windows Phone 8. It's up to us to determine if our app will be able to use all three of them, but it's up to the user to determine which one will be used, actually. So there's no way to set this from code, the one that will be actually used, unless we limit it to only one. But that won't really be a good user experience. Also, secondary tiles, they are still here. Secondary tiles are kind of like the live tiles, they're actually exactly the same. But instead of launching the app, they launch the app and navigate to a certain page of the application without the user having to go through all the navigation steps. Okay, let's have a look at how that works. Actually, while that solution is opening up, we can have a look at the simulation dashboard. I'm back in my app that I had just a minute ago for the debugging demo. If I go to the tools menu, here's the simulation dashboard. And here we can simulate a certain network speed and a signal strength. If you have a very data-centric application that gets its data from a bunch of services, do use this to test your app and its responsiveness on slow networks and provide some visual feedback to the user so that he knows that he still has to wait. Also, the lock screen here, if I click on locked and I check my emulator, it's on the lock screen now. This can come in handy when you're developing lock screen apps. And this is something that's really missing from the Windows 8 simulator. Unless it's hidden somewhere and I haven't found it yet, but I don't think so. You can also trigger a reminder. I click that, here it is. I can snooze it or I can just dismiss it. Nice tool, the simulation dashboard. Certainly something to remember and to use, definitely. Okay, onto the tiles then. The tiles, the three tiles, the templates, can be set either from XML to be the primary tile or from code. We'll start with the XML part. So there's this WM app manifest file here under the properties. We should know this from Windows Phone 7. Only now, if we double click it, there's this nice visual designer for it where we can do a bunch of stuff. We can set a primary template here, but we have a lot more possibilities in the XML itself. So if you press F7, it asks me if I want to close this. Yes, and here's the XML. And under the tokens element here, this is where we set the tile. This is the default, like every application starts out. I'm going to put this in comments and use this one. This is the flip tile, basically the same as in Windows Phone 7, just flips around, shows an image. We have a small image URI here, a background image URI, and a large background image URI. That's for the different tile sizes. This is the small one, the normal sized one, and the wide one. This is the wide one. We can set some content here, and we can even set the lock screen icon here. But more about that when we get to the lock screen. Now, if I run this application, code. And I just go back and I'm going to pin it to my start screen. This is the image that I've provided in the XML. And with a bit of luck, it will start flipping. There we go. And it shows the back content. All this is done from XML without writing any code at all. Going to remove it again. I can also use this button, set flip tile. That didn't work. Let's go check the code. Okay, the button just updates the tile to be of this type. So let's try that again. Pin the application. Punch it, set it. And it should show some other messages. Now it says hello from code. And that's the message that we set here. Okay, so how does it work? When we click the button, we define a new flip tile data. Set the property white back content is for the white tile. The title is the small one on the front, here, title from code. The back title is the same but on the other side of the tile when it flips. And then the back content is the large text on the back of the tile. We can also set the counter here, that's a small 5 you see on the top right. The 5 here comes from the XML, it's defined there. And then we need a shell tile, which is a clause included in the SDK. The active tiles there is a collection of all the tiles for this application. So if we have added any secondary tiles, they would all be here inside that collection. But the first element there is always the primary tile, this one here. So we need that one, and then we call its update methods and pass in the new flip tile data, and then it will update. Okay, that was the flip tile. This is pretty basic, we've all gotten used to using this one. The iconic tile then. Has kind of the same properties, only that it says template iconic. So I've added count of 5 here, an icon. I'm going to remove this application from my emulator. There we go. And I'm going to run it again with the new XML. Pin to start. And there's a new template. Got the 5 beautifully aligned next to the icon here. The message is this property right here. And also a title here. When we go to the small one, it still has the count. And the big one can show 3 lines of content, which we can define with these properties right here. Now, to do this from code, is the same, but instead of using the flip tile data, we use the iconic tile data. Set the title, the image, the icon. The small icon is for when we use a small tile. The white tile and then the normal size use the same icon. If you look at it, it's about the same size. Counts we've set to 25 here, and I've done this for a reason. If we go back to the application and we set the iconic tile through code and we take a look at the smaller sized, the 5 falls off. I'm not sure if this is a known bug, but it's something That bugs me anyway. So I hope they find a fix for this pretty quick, but just remember for now the small tiles, the second character just falls off of the count. The normal size and the white size are okay. And also here from the codes we can set the white content to something like Hello World on three lines of codes. There we go. Okay, the third one is the cycle template. This one, as mentioned, will cycle through maximum 9 images. Can be less, I have two here. I will just cycle through them in small steps, just like the photo app does. The photo app is this one right here. That's not move. Okay, there we go. It will move like this. All pixels will move up slowly. I will then switch to the next one. Going to remove the application again. I'm not sure if this is necessary, just a precaution. Run the application. Pin it to start. And here you see my icon moving up. And then it will switch to the next image. Hopefully, there we go. And now that one's moving up. Also with a count and a title. Okay, so what I've done while the image was gone is click on the Set Cycle Tile button here. And that has updated my cycle tile right here with a new counter and a new awesome cycle tile title. How we do this? Basically, just the same. We use the cycle tile data this time. Set the title, the count, background image. That's for the small tile. I don't think that the small one actually shows the images. When we go to the smallest tile, it just shows the small background image here. It doesn't cycle between all the images. That's only for the normal size and the white tile. What we also need is a list of URIs that point to the images. And we can just add that to the cycle images property of the cycle tile data. And then again, call the update methods, and our tile is updated. Should you not want to update the tile but create one, you can just shell tile dot create. Use the shell tile dot create, and you can create a secondary tile by passing in the navigation URI here, the page where you want to navigate to when the tile is clicked, and as a second parameter, the shell tile data, which is what we have defined up here. Again, I'm going to close this PowerPoint, so I'm always going to the wrong one. Back to there. So that was it for the tiles. I'm especially happy with the iconic tile template. I think a lot of applications will make good use of this one. Okay, next subject is the lock screen. There can be a maximum of 5 applications on the lock screen at the same time. The user decides which ones. They can, if there aren't 5 on the lock screen yet, your application will be added automatically. If there are more than 5, then it's up to the user to switch some applications out through the settings menu. So if you use lock screen in your application, make sure to notify your user that this application has this capability. I can't imagine any users going to the settings menu to see if by mistake any application can use the lock screen and swap some out. So give them a message inside the application that says that you have included that capability, and that they might have to go to settings to show your app on the lock screen. You need an icon of 30 by 30 pixels. It needs to be a white one, transparent and white. And the count that it shows is the same count that is used on the tile. So if you don't have a count on the tile, you won't get a count on the lock screen. And the capability needs to be set in the manifest file that we were just in a minute ago. Let's go have a look. I'm using the same application as before for this. So when I open it back up, I have a set lock screen button here. If I click it, I go to the settings, the lock screen settings automatically. And here I can choose my applications that show up on the lock screen. If I click this button, here's my application, the tiles demo. And now it's added. So now I have the phone hub, the messaging hub, and my own application on the lock screen. If I go into the simulation dashboard again, and I lock it, then apparently nothing happens. That's weird. There we go. Here's my application. This is the icon I was using, and it shows the count of 17, which is the same count that is on my tile right here. So that works. Now, how does this work? We have to go to the manifest file here. We have to set a device lock image URI. This is my icon called lock screen. And then I have to set these two extensions. Now, this is something that can't be done from the visual designer, from the XML file. This really has to be done in the code. So these two lines, just exactly like this, you can copy paste them from anywhere you find them. And that's it. This extension, the device lock image URI that points to the icon, and you're basically good to go. Now you have noticed that if I click the button, that I get into inside a settings menu. This is done by using the launch URI async and then with the MS settings lock. This is something that I believe is new as well in Windows Phone 8. I'm not too sure about that. But there are a bunch of URIs that we can use to get to certain places inside the operating system. You can even define one for your own application so that other developers can launch your application from within their apps. If your app isn't installed on the system and they call your URI, then the Microsoft Store will open, the Windows Phone Store will open onto the page of your application, ready to download. I've already seen several community pages, websites appear, where you can register your own application with its URI, so that other developers can find it. Okay, back to the presentation we go. Okay, multi-resolution. Windows Phone 8 has three resolutions. 480 by 800, that's the one used in Windows Phone 7, the one we all know. Then there's a 768 by 1280, and then there's 720p. That means that we have two aspect ratios as well. We have 15:9, we have 16:9. As you can see on the image on the left, the pink and the green resolution are the same height, but the pink one is a bit wider. And that's something that we have to keep in mind when developing our user interface. So what happens is your application is developed for 480 by 800 automatically, and whatever resolution is on the screen of the device that is being used, it will scale up from 480 by 800. So that means for the 768 by 1280 that you have a scale of 1.6, and for the 720 by 1280 you have a scale of 1.5. Which also means, as a developer, that you have to include your assets for the highest resolution to make sure that they look very crisp on every resolution that they will show up on. You can check the resolution and the scale from code, but obviously you can change it. And let's have a look at how that works. So, I have here an application that doesn't do anything actually. It has only one button that actually responds. But in XAML, it's quite big. It has a bunch of buttons inside the grid, different rows, some columns. And what you see here is that one row is defined as auto, which means it will take an automatic size depending on the controls that are inside the row, and all the others will adjust themselves to that. Same with the columns. No static numbers here, all are free-flowing sizes. If I now run this on my do a quick rebuild. If I run this on my WVGA emulator, which is the 480 by 800, we get this kind of calculator. This is actually a sample I've taken from the MSDN website. Couldn't have built it better myself, looks quite nice. But if I run this now on the 720p emulator, which will now start firing up, and actually can take quite a while. As you can see, it is pretty big. So I'm just going to let it launch in the background. And we're going to have a look at the code here. This is code behind one of those buttons. What it does is it gives a message box with the current host, it's his actual height and the actual width, which gives us the resolution that is being used. And then the scale factor, which should be 0, 1.5 or 1.6, I believe. Oh, that was quick. So we now have two emulators almost running the same application. There we go. So same application, two different resolutions, two different aspect ratios. Looks almost exactly the same. Only these buttons on the big one are a bit less wide, but that's okay for this kind of application. That's exactly how we want it. And if you click the clear button, there's the resolution and the scale. Okay, it's 100, 150 is the 1.5 scale. Really important, and I can't stress this enough, is test your application on all resolutions. Make sure it looks good for everyone. And back to the slides. Now, the wallet. Wallet is a new hub in Windows Phone 8 where you can collect coupons, credit cards. You can enter your own credit card details there, and then you can hide the card somewhere so your wife will never find it again. You can add memberships, loyalty cards. If you buy for a certain amount in a certain store, you get some points. If you have enough points, then you get a discount. That can all be added inside a wallet. You can also manage payments in instruments like what credit cards or your PayPal account in for using the application store or the music store. And you can even link items in the wallet to applications on the phone, meaning that a certain in-app purchase item can have a discount on a certain day and it can appear inside the wallet, for example. Or if your application is of a store that has a membership, then you can have all those details from the app in the wallet. And then you can use NFC to make payments without having your debit or your credit cards at hand. Now this only works in some countries. They are expanding on it. Here in Belgium, I've heard they are doing tests with it, but I don't know if any stores actually using it. But I hope they will in the future because it looks awesome to pay with your phone. Okay, what do you need? You need to add capabilities to your application. We haven't discussed that yet. I will when we demo this. You need the ID Cap wallet, the wallet payment instruments, or the secure element, depending on what you're going to do with the wallet API. The first one is the basic one. You need it for everything. The second one is for payment instruments like credit cards, PayPal accounts, and others. Secure element is for when you're going to do actual payments. It's my guess that the first two will be very commonly used, and the third one will be very specific for certain companies. Now, also the important note here, when you're using either the secure element or the payment instruments, you need to request special permissions when you're submitting your application to the store. And then those permissions have to be applied to your developer account. Just be aware of this. If you don't do it, your app will fail submission and you will lose valuable time. Okay, let's have a look at the wallets. I'm going to close this very big emulator. Okay. Let's see the application first. Yeah, rebuild. There we go. What I'm going to do is create a deal that's been created, and we're going to register an account. If I click the register button, the wallet API will ask me if I'm sure I want to add this information to my wallet. Click save. Okay, that's been done. If I now go to the wallet right here, then you will see that I have a membership here for future Lumia 920 owners, which I'm proudly a part of. I have 930 points in my balance. I have account information, a phone number, and I can even add a website here. I can pin this to start this membership, or I can edit the information, delete it, or unlink it from the application. Now, as for the deals, looks like I get a free Lumia 920 from Microsoft. It expires tomorrow. And the details are that I get a free one if they ever have enough supply, because we all know they are running very short on it. Yeah, okay. Let's have a look at the code. So to create the deal, we just need a new instance of class deal. The parameter is an ID that we give to it. It has to be unique, but it can be anything. Then we can fill in some properties like the merchant name, Microsoft in this case, the display name. Let me open up the wallets so we can see what it is. So the display name is what is up here. Description is what is down here, expiration dates. Issuer name is nowhere on this page. And then the navigation URI. This is a page in my application where I'm taken if I click this open app here. And there's my free phone. It's the red one, the most beautiful one in my opinion. Okay, this navigation URI here works just the same as navigating inside an application, so don't forget the URI kinds and dot relative. And then we just call the save async method on the new deal, the instance of deal here. And then I just show a message box saying the deal has been created. For the registration, I need an add wallet item task and a wallet transaction item. And this wallet transaction item is my membership. I fill in the properties, the issuer name, customer name, account number is something that is generated here, not important. A phone number, I can add even add some custom properties like email, for example. Just a key value, I can add a key value pair or a key and a custom wallet property. For the image, if I go here, this is the image, the white icon here. It needs a bitmap image for that. So I'm taking one that is included here, the icon.png. I need to create a stream from it so I can set it. So I can set the stream as a source for my bitmap image. It's done this way. Then I can set the logo for three sizes. And then the add wallet item task dot item is my new membership. And I just call the show method. And then I get the show method is what gives me the option to save to the wallet or to cancel. And when I click save, I'm done. And then the Lumia page here just does nothing, it's just the image of the Lumia. So, lenses. Lenses are actually camera applications. They are launched from the camera instead of clicking a tile or a shortcut. And an example is included on all Windows Phone 8 devices is the Bing Vision. This was also included in Windows Phone 7 as the capability to scan DVDs, books and QR codes. This is actually how it works. You open the built-in camera, tap the lens button. Then you get the lens picker that shows all installed lenses on your system. You select the lens that you want, it starts up, you take the image, and you are back in the camera application. What you need to do is set capabilities. I forgot to show that one in the last demo, so I'm going to do it now. You need to register a lens extension in the XML. And when a lens is activated, it will navigate to the main page of XAML with the parameter of action viewfinder launch. I use a URI mapper to intercept this and then just point my application to the lens page. Starting up. Okay. So before I forget, I'm going to show the capabilities first. So for the capabilities, we best go to the visual designer of the WM app manifest on the top capabilities here. This is a list of all capabilities of your phone, and you need to check the ones that you're going to use. So here we need the camera one because we have a lens application and the media library photo one. Don't forget this or it will throw an not allowed exception. So with that in order, back to the XML. Now, for to register an application as a lens app, you need to add this extension to it. When that is found in the XML, it is a lens application. Simple as that. Now, what this does is in my lens page, is where it will load up the camera. I have a go to the XML here. I have a video brush that will show me my camera, the view from my camera. So this is how I set the source so that I get an image. And when I click a button, I can capture the image here. I can capture the image from my camera. And I can do some image editing should I want. Applications like Instagram would be perfect for this capability. And then I just save it to my picture to my picture library. Yes. If I run it, if I run the application, it's just empty because I need to start it from the camera. So this is the camera from the emulator, and this is the lenses button. Here is my demo app. There we go. We are now on the lens.xaml page. I can snap a picture, and if I now go take a look in my pictures library, here is the picture that I've just taken from within my lens. I haven't done any editing on it, but you can do whatever you want with it. Now, how does that URI mapper work? In the initialize phone application method in my app.xaml.cs, I can create a new URI mapper and attach it to the root frame URI mapper. What this does is every time we navigate to a page in my application, I will go through here. I'll actually just set a breakpoint here and run it. Here we go already. The URI is the main page, and I'm just going to check here if it contains the viewfinder launch. And if it does, I'm going to navigate it to the lens.xaml. If it doesn't, I'm just going to return the URI. So if I do this again from within the camera. Like that. Now it's going to the viewfinder launch. I'm going to return the page that I need. And there we go. We're running a bit overtime here. want me to skip a few parts?
It's like you want maybe shorten the next demo so
Okay.
that you can review when your key takeaways are from the presentation.
Okay. The speech one is you have three capabilities: text to speech, speech to text, or voice commands. Because this demo fails quite a lot, actually, I think I'll just show the code, and we won't actually demo it for my own sanity. So this schematic gives a nice overview of how it works. The voice commands are being taken care of by the operating system itself, while text to speech and speech to text is done by the application itself. Voice commands, you can register any comment that can be used to launch your application from inside the operating system by just pressing and holding the start button. You can launch any application by just saying the correct voice command. Okay, like I've said, quick overview of just the code. If I can click the button. Let's start with the voice commands. To use voice commands, you need to add a voice command definition file. And you have a template for that, include with the SDK. Here it is. When you add that, you get a bunch of demo voice commands, example voice commands. The example property here is what is shown in the message box that this gives you, as an example that you can say. This is what it will actually listen for, and when it hears you say this, then it will show this information. And that's all you need to do. The operating system takes care of all the rest. Now for text to speech, you need a speech synthesizer, and you can add voice information, but this is not needed. You can use all the installed voices in the system, but you can never know for sure what voices are installed. So if you don't use this, it will by default use an English voice. Here I search for a female British voice. That one is actually installed. And then it will just speak this message. Now, for speech to text, you need the speech recognizer UI. So here we have again the same text that is being spoken. And then you can here the listen text is what is shown when the application is listening to you. It will show a message, and it will also show an example of what you can reply. Readout enabled means that it will repeat what it heard you say, or what it thinks that it heard you say. And then you can confirm if it's okay or not. You just need to call the recognize with UI async, and it will start listening to you. If you have spoken, then you can get a result here, status being succeeded, busy, cancelled, or some other options. You can get the text and the confidence. If the quality was good, medium, bad, you can determine that as well. And with that, you can develop an entire conversation. You can make the device ask you if you want a drink, and then you can even add a list of replies. For example, here I add the grammar from list. I just add yes or no. If I say anything else but yes or no, it won't hear me. It will say that it didn't understand. If I say yes, it will ask me what can I get you, and I have water or coffee, and so on and so on. You can really develop an entire conversation like this for those lonely evenings. Now for the voice commands, you have the XML file, but you also need to register them. And that is done by calling the install command sets from File Async on the voice command service class. Just point it to the XML file, include it in your project, and that's it. Call this whenever the application launches, and your commands will always be available. Okay, the last part is about location, the GPS. In Windows Phone 8, we have a new API for location. The Windows Phone 7 instructions still work as well. And we now allow background tracking. Now there's only one application that can track the location in the background at the same time. The GeoLocator class keeps the application alive, so it won't get tombstoned. But you have to be aware that this application doing things in the background will drain the battery of your user. So notify your users of this. Or you might get bad reviews on your app. Okay, very quick the code of this. I've been a bit lazy for this sample, and I've taken the sample from the Windows Phone Developers website. So, first, they're going to check if the location consent exists in the application settings, because you need to ask your user if he agrees that his location is being tracked. If it's not there, the application will ask for it, and the reply will be saved in the application settings. Now when we ask for location for one time, we just get a geolocator here with a desired accuracy in meters. And then we can get the geoposition async with a maximum age and a timeout. It will get the location with latitude and longitude in coordinates, and set it to a text block here, and give a message location obtained. If your GPS is disabled in the phone settings, which you can do right here, if you disable this, it will throw an exception. There's not a specific type for this, it will just throw an exception, but with this result, so you can check for that. If this is your exception, then you can just show location is disabled. Now if you want to track the location in the background, you need to specify a geolocator at the application level in the app.xaml.cs class, a property here. And then there's a boolean here running in background that we set to false and to true if the application goes to the background. And then in the application, tracking code itself, we can check if it's running in background when the position has changed. If it's not, then we update the UI. If it is running in background, we pop a toast message saying what my new location is. And if the status changes of the geolocator, we can show certain messages. Okay, some key takeaways. You need a second level address translation for the emulator. It's on all the modern CPUs all have it, so if you have a new device, don't worry about it. You need Windows 8 for the SDK and Windows 8 Professional for the emulator. Your applications can still debug when they are launched from notification or a secondary tile. We have a simulation dashboard that allows us to test against slow or networks with a poor connection. We have templates that allows us to build apps in native code and in HTML5. We have three tile templates now: flip, iconic, and cycle. We can put our apps on the lock screen. Our apps scale automatically up from 800 by 480. So make sure that the assets are all big quality. We can use the wallet API for discounts, memberships, deals. We have we can add a form of camera apps called lenses. And we have a speech API that provides us text-to-speech, speech-to-text, and voice commands. And the new location API can track our location from the background, but only one app at a time.